Blog Talk Radio. big time in these NBA finals. He was big time. Big time. And he earned that ring. He earned that ring. And give him a lot of credit. Give him a lot of credit for what he did. He is the big reason the Miami Heat are hoisting their second NBA title. And Dwayne Wade, in a lot of ways, he handed it over to LeBron James. He told the world that this was LeBron James' team. And LeBron James took it from there. He took it from there. And then we go to the NBA Finals now. Game two, the Heat down 1-0. The Heat needing a basket. LeBron James calmly drives to the left, banks it off the glass. And then he comes down. Big-time defense on Kevin Durant. Many can call it a foul. Probably was, but he got away from it. Got away from four. He got away with it, I should say. And then, getting away with it, he calmly sinks 2 free throws to clinch the ball game. LeBron James has done everything that you can ever ask from him. There's no more he truly can do at this point. Now, moving forward, when he first came to Miami, it was about not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4, not 5, not 6, not 7. So he's got some work to do. He's got some work to do. He truly does have some work to do, especially if he wants to win 7 championships. But LeBron James, for now, has at least gotten everybody off his back. Everybody now is off his back because he finally has a championship. He has a championship. He has what he rightfully deserved and earned in winning a championship. He's got his championship. He's got his ring. LeBron James earned it. He earned it. He earned his ring, and he got it. And we'll see what happens moving forward, but for now, kudos to LeBron James. It's time to stand up and clap and celebrate this great NBA player. He showed greatness in this series. He showed greatness throughout this championship run, and he's been great. The only thing that's missing, and the only thing that was missing, I should say, at this point, from LeBron James' resume was a championship. He has the MVPs. He's done everything that he's needed to do outside of winning a championship. He has that championship now, folks. Now you can just leave him alone. Leave him alone. Let him enjoy this time. But we expect more, King. King James, we expect more rings. We expect a little more than just one, buddy. But for now, you'll have your break. Enjoy it. Celebrate. Have a good time. Have a good time. You've earned it, son. LeBron James has earned his ring. Everybody. He's earned it, and he deserves it. We're going to bring in now, and the NFL season is upon us. It's mini camps for last week. For a lot of teams, training camps are a month away, and it's time to start focusing on the National Football League. And we're going to bring in now a guy who's getting himself ready for this upcoming season and is doing some great things in his community. We're going to bring in now Eagles linebacker Moses Foku. Moses, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Moses, looking at last year, the Philadelphia Eagles, a disappointment to a lot of people. Last year you had all the Dream Team talk. How much did that Dream Team talk affect you guys in 2011?
You know what? It affects us a little bit, but it doesn't. You know, we have a clean slate. This year's the new year. We got a couple new pieces to the team. We've had an off season. We've had OTA. Again, we got a chance to get together with the new bunch from last year. And, you know, we were the hottest team leaving out at the end of last year, so we're just going to try to get on that momentum and try to kind of ride it to the end of this season.
And you talked about that new energy, and last year you guys had this past few weeks you had the mini camps and everything. Was there a different energy for you guys this time around in comparison to last year? Granted, you didn't have the mini camps, but is there a different energy around the team?
Definitely. I think there's a sense of urgency and just a new excitement. You know, I think coaches and players alike, they're all on the same page, and we're trying to get that ring, and I think we all have the same goal and we're on the same page.
And Moses, last year for you was tough for you in terms of you lost your starting job, and ultimately you would be lost for the season with the ankle injury. How difficult was 2011 for you personally?
2011, you know, it started out rough, you know, especially being done at the end of last season for the rest of the year, and then having to start the year off rehabbing. But you know, it drove me. I had a successful rehab. I'm back 100% healthy. And during that downtime, I had a lot of time to think and to kind of, you know, figure out what I like to do, you know, post football. And I'm actually opening up my own foundation this summer, and based out of Maryland, and it's a foundation called Route 53 Foundation.
And so, a lot of ways, the Route 53 Foundation was born from that downtime in some respect.
Definitely. So although it was a bad ending, something good came out of it.
Right. And looking at last year, the defense it had its struggles, and many blamed the linebackers. Overall, what do you think happened with the defense in 2011?
I think there was just a lot of new pieces. A lot of new pieces thrown on that defense last year alone, and I think guys didn't really know each other. New pieces to the defense, new coaching scheme, new coaching staff, just a lot of nuances, a lot of new pieces to that defense in general, and I don't think we had enough time to kind of gel until towards the latter part of the year.
We're talking to Philadelphia Eagles linebacker Moses Foku. And Moses, the Eagles brought in D'Amico Ryans from the Texans, I mean, a very good linebacker. How much does he help the defense in 2012?
You know, having D'Amico has been a great asset, you know. He brings experience. He brings a leadership to our team, and it only makes us stronger. So, you know, we're excited to have him, and we're excited to bring that kind of caliber player to our linebacking core.
And right now, Moses, you're competing for a roster spot at the linebacker position. You were a walk on at Maryland, so you're used to doing things the hard way. Talk about how you approach this situation.
Just like I've been approaching it my whole life, you know. Hard work beats everything, and that's the way I got to go into camp. You know, I've been fortunate to have a couple good years in Philadelphia, and just put your nose down and grind it out. Work hard, and everything will put itself in place, and that's exactly what I expect to do this camp. But for this week, I'm kind of focusing on my foundation. We're having our culinary cookout at the end of the next Friday, and I'm out here in all season working hard, but at the end of the day, you know, you gotta have a spot on that field if you want to do anything.
And this year, this is a contract year for you. Does that motivate you even more?
You know what? I love playing the game, and that's my number one love. That's my number one motivation. I think all these other things will sort itself out. I love to play the game. I play with my heart, and I play hard. So as long as I continue to do it, I think everything else will sort itself out.
We're talking to Philadelphia Eagles linebacker Moses Foku. And Moses, you're working hard on and off the field with your Route 53 Foundation. Tell us a bit about this great foundation.
This great foundation was something I've always wanted to do, especially since I got to the league, you know, which was give back. And the foundation is pretty much focused on the overall development of children growing up in urban areas. We believe if they don't have the opportunity to grow intellectually and emotionally, that they're not going to prosper in school. So pretty much, it's all about positive energy. It's all about reinforcing these kids, letting them know that they can become anything that they want to be, no matter what their circumstances is. And we like to facilitate, and we like to help them out any which way we can through mentorship, through financial aid, and any kind of way we can kind of come in there and give them a helping hand to let them know that, you know, it's okay to succeed in school. It's okay to be a doctor. It's okay to be a lawyer. That you don't just have to let your circumstances hold you down. And that's kind of what the foundation is about. It's all about empowerment. It's all about letting these kids know that they can become something great.
And you have a big football camp coming up next week on June 30th. You have any scheduled
Definitely.
Players appearing? Who do you have scheduled to appear?
I have some of the Vernon, some of the Vontae, the Davis brothers. I have Vernon Davis, Vontae Davis appearing at the camp. I have Adrian Moulton, he's played with the Seahawks. I have Joe LaFedge, who played with the Colts. And I think I have Akeem Jordan, my linebacker buddy from the Eagles, appearing too. So should be a good time, a good turnout, and I hope the kids enjoy it.
And talking to you, it's almost like this foundation has given you a renewed energy, a renewed spirit.
Definitely. I'm very much into it. I'm very excited about it. And I'm just excited to give back and to do something that I love to do, impact other kids' life.
And that's a great, great thing, doing great things in the community. Where can we find information about this great foundation?
Any information you'd like to find, just go on to Root, and that's R-O-O-T, 53foundation.org. Everything's on the website.
Okay, Root53foundation.org. Fans, make sure you go check it out. Check out some of the great things Moses Poku has going on in the community, doing a lot of work on and off the field, and it needs to be applauded, and I applaud you for doing these great things.
Thank you so much.
Moses, we wish you nothing but the best of luck with this Route 53 Foundation. And again, Route53foundation.org. Make sure you check it out. Please, please support what he is doing. He is doing some great things. Moses, we wish you nothing but the best of luck in 2012, and we would love to do it again.
Thank you so much. Go Eagles.
Yeah, definitely a Moses. Full disclosure here, lifelong Eagles fan. I love the Philadelphia Eagles. Last year was tough. It was tough
because I know
there was so much talent on this roster, and I know that this team is very close. And I'm liking that the Eagles are flying under the radar right now. No more dream team talk. That stuff is out the window. I love that the Eagles are flying below the radar.
Exactly, as it should be. That's how we want it.
And I love it, and let's bring it home, bring us a championship in 2012.
You got it, buddy.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank
And that's the Route 53 Foundation, and that's Root, R-O-O-T, 53foundation.org. That's Root, R-O-O-T, 53foundation.org, and make sure you check it out. Support some of the great things that Moses Poku has going on in the community right now. And the Eagles, I put it out there, full disclosure, lifelong Eagles fan. I love the Birds. I bleed green, midnight green, that is. And that is the Philadelphia Eagles green. And you look at it now, you look at the Eagles. I love right now, and I said it to Moses, but I love it right now that the Eagles are flying below the radar. I love that this team is flying below the radar. Last year, the Eagles, it was all the dream team talk. And in some respect, the Green Bay Packers, in a lot of ways, they were the Super Bowl champions, but they didn't really have the pressure that the Eagles had. The Eagles, in some respect, had the pressure. It's almost like they won the Super Bowl the year before. It was almost like the Eagles had won the Super Bowl the year before, and everybody was gunning for them. And it showed. And you look at the team, it struggled. Turnovers were a big problem. The defense wasn't that great. It had its struggles throughout the course of the year. But this team, they finished strong. And I don't know how much you read into that. I don't know how much I really truly read into it, but we'll see. We'll see. The key is Michael Vick has to stay healthy for 16 games. He cannot miss the games that he missed last season. They're going to need Michael Vick if this team wants to be successful. And I said it. If they had Michael Vick, I said during the season, if they had Michael Vick for the full 16 games, the Eagles would be in the playoffs and possibly in the Super Bowl. Possibly. Possibly. It seemed like the defense came together a little bit near the end there. And now you bring in a D'Amico Ryans from the Texans, a guy that will and hopefully settle that middle linebacker position. And, you know, they bring in O.J. Otagwe. I mean, a veteran. You got a veteran. He's a veteran safety. And, again, hopefully Kirk Coleman and Nate Allen can step up to the forefront. They're putting Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie on the outside where he excels. Hopefully that'll help. They moved on to Asante Samuel. I wanted them to keep Asante because of his big playability, because of his ability to make plays. But they decided to move on from Asante Samuel. I guess in a lot of ways they figured he was a distraction and it was time to move on from him. But, I mean, this team is it's a team that's very, very talented. This is a very talented team. The pass rush with Jason Babin and Trent Cole is very good. Of course, you got Nnamdi and Rodgers-Cromartie on the outside. The safeties and the linebackers are the question marks for the Eagles right now. The offensive line really came together near the end of the season. And so this team was much improved down the stretch. They were a much improved team down the stretch. And so now the Philadelphia Eagles, an improved Philadelphia Eagles team, I believe, a team that has a lot of pressure. The pressure is on Michael Vick because after this year, he has a manageable cap number where the Eagles can cut him and not suffer much of a cap situation, not suffer much of a cap problem. So they can get rid of Michael Vick after this year. So this is a big year for Michael Vick, a big, big year for Michael Vick, big year for Andy Reid. And he's gotten more power with Joe Banner moved on. So this is a big year for Andy Reid. Big year for Andy Reid. And a big, big year for Andy Reid. Big year for him. And a big year for the Philadelphia Eagles. I want to also apologize. Early on, we had some technical difficulties. We seemed to clear that up, but we had some difficulties early on. We cleaned that up now. Hopefully everything will work well moving forward throughout the course of this show. But we cleaned up these technical difficulties. Hopefully you will enjoy and be able to hear some of the great things that I have to say and some of the great things that other people have to say moving forward in this show. But we have cleared it up. The technical difficulties have gone away, and we're ready to do what we have to do, and that is talk sports and have fun doing it. And looking at it now, and we talked about the Eagles, but I want to go back to the NBA Finals. Looking at the NBA Finals now, and selfishly speaking, I wanted this thing to continue on past Thursday because of just the type of play that we had in this series. It was just some great high-level basketball. Great high-level basketball played by superstars in this game. The Durants, the Westbrooks, Wades, the LeBrons of the world. I mean, you, on this stage, we had arguably the top five players in the game of basketball. And I mean, it's arguably, I'm not saying Westbrook or Wade are in that top five category, but you can make an argument for those guys. You can truly make an argument for those guys. But you look at it now, and looking at that NBA final, I wanted it to go more. I wanted it to go longer, and I was very interested to see what would happen if the Thunder would have won Thursday and Game 6 and 7 being in Oklahoma City, the type of talk we would get about LeBron James, the type of pressure that would be on LeBron James if this series would have extended past 5. I mean, the pressure that would have been on this guy would have been, in a lot of ways, in some respect, unbearable maybe. I mean, it would have been big-time pressure on LeBron James. And the Heat in general, going to Oklahoma City, a place where Oklahoma City only lost one time, and that was to the Miami Heat, one time in these playoffs, one time. So you wonder what would have happened if LeBron James and the Miami Heat were forced to go to Oklahoma City. You wonder what would have happened. But it's irrelevant at this point. And you know Miami is going to find a way to celebrate this NBA title. You know that Miami is going to celebrate this thing right. You remember when the Miami Heat first stepped onto the scene, when the Big Three first came together, LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, and they were talking 1, not 2, not 3, not 4, not 5, not 6, not 7. But you almost got the sense that the Miami Heat had already won the championship before we actually had played a game. it was on Pat Riley. Like, it was just Miami was just celebrating having the big three together, but they celebrated before they actually won. And you look at and speaking of that, you look at Game Five. Interesting part of that game where Mario Chalmers was waving to the crowd and waving the crowd on. And LeBron James came over immediately and said, you know what, Tom, not now, not yet, not now, not yet. And you remember that. And it was reminiscent of Game 2 in 2011 where you had Miami and the Dallas Mavericks. And in that game, Dwayne Wade hit that corner three, struck a pose, and the Miami Heat were celebrating. It was almost like at that point the Miami Heat thought they had won that particular ballgame and put that ballgame away. But the Dallas Mavericks, they came back, had a strong comeback, and ultimately they will win Game 2, and that was a big, big game. Because if the Heat go up 2-0 there, they probably win the series. But the Dallas Mavericks, and they were a tough, tough ball club. They came back, and they were strong, and they were aggressive, and they got it done in that particular series. They got it done. But it was funny. It was almost like you saw the growth of LeBron James. You saw growth there with LeBron James learning from what happened a year ago, learning that you don't celebrate until it's actually time to celebrate. You saw LeBron James when it was really time for him to celebrate. He was just jumping around and bouncing on the bench, him, Eddie Curry, Dwayne Wade, and all those guys, and everybody. Eddie Curry does get a ring. Eddie Curry does get a ring, and I know a lot of people have I've seen a lot of it on Twitter, the talk of Eddie Curry getting a ring and not deserving a ring and all that other stuff. But the bottom line is Eddie Curry has a ring. He's got a ring. Juwan Howard has a ring, the first fiver to get a ring. So everybody's getting rings for the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat, you look at this series, it came down to the role players as well. I mean, of course, you know what you're going to get from the Wades and the Boshes and the LeBrons of the world. But Shane Battier was big, 17 points in Game 1 and 2. Mario Chalmers was big with his performance in Game 4 with 25 points. Mike Miller in Game 5, the clinching game, he was big as well. The man struggling with back issues, 7 for 11 from the field, 7 for 8 from downtown, 7 three-pointers for Mike Miller, 23 big points for Mike Miller, and he clinched it for the Miami Heat. He clinched it for the Miami Heat. And I also thought a big part of this series is when Eric Spoelstra, and it's time to give him his credit for what he did with this ball club. And I think this year was even harder because of the lockout shortened season and also because of missing Chris Bosh for an extended period of time in these playoffs. That was big. That was big. But you look at the Miami Heat. Putting Chris Bosh in a starting lineup as the center was a big move for the Miami Heat. Putting Bosh in at the center spot was a big move for the Miami Heat. And it changed the course of this series in a lot of ways. Bosh came in there, and he... The reality is, and you didn't expect this really coming into this series, but the Heat front court, Manley Bosh, outplayed Ibaka, outplayed Perkins. I mean, Chris Bosh was big in this series. He was big for the Miami Heat in this series. And in the game clinching Game 5, he had 24 big points and 7 rebounds. He was big. And Chris Bosh, that move to put him at the center, and you got LeBron James. LeBron James can guard any position in basketball. I mean, he was guarding Kendrick Perkins at times. So the man can guard any position in the game of basketball. 1 through 5, LeBron James can guard it. He's that guy. He's that good. And what LeBron was doing in Games 5 was he was not only scoring his points, not only getting his rebounds, but he was involving everybody and getting open shots for Battier, for Mike Miller, for Chalmers, getting open shots for a lot of guys. And Mike Miller is a very good shooter. You give him room, he can kill you. You can't leave Mike Miller. And he's been struggling throughout the course of these playoffs. But 23 points in 23 minutes, including 7 three-pointers, was big for the Miami Heat. He stepped up when he needed to step up in Game 5. And that's the thing, a lot about role players. The thing about role players a lot of times, and I heard Charles Barkley talk about this all the time, but the thing about role players, they seem to step up and they tend to step up at home for whatever reason, seem to have more confidence at home. And the role players for the Miami Heat did just that. They stepped up. They stepped up. And when they stepped up big. And they were big. And they were big. And Shane Battier, I mean, he really struggled throughout the course of this season, only averaging 4 points a game. He struggled throughout the course of this season. But he was big in these NBA Finals. He was big for the Miami Heat. Very big. He was big. Battier was big. He stepped up. He got it done for the Miami Heat. And I know many of you, we probably didn't hear the first part of the show, but our scheduled guest today, we did bring in Moses Fokou from the Philadelphia Eagles, also expected to be joined by WSVN reporter Donovan Campbell in Miami, Channel 7 in Miami. He's going to be joining us as well. And also actor Brian White is going to be joining us. So make sure you stick around. We got a good show lined up for you today. And I know you might have missed a lot of parts of the show. You might have missed the first few minutes. We had some technical difficulties. They are corrected, but you may have missed the first couple minutes. But, again, we're going to be joined by WSVN Channel 7 sports reporter in Miami, Donovan Campbell, also actor Brian White. And last time we saw Brian, he played in Tyler Perry's Good Deeds. And also we were joined by Moses Fokou of the Philadelphia Eagles. It was good to have Moses Fokou on and talking about his great foundation, the Root 53 Foundation. That's Root 53 Foundation.org, and that's Root R-O-R-O-O-T. So it's Root 53 Foundation.org. So we got that taken care of, and make sure you check that foundation out one more time. R-O-O-T Foundation. R-O-O-T 53 Foundation.org, and make sure you support some of the great things Moses Fokou has going on in the community. But looking at it now and looking at the Miami Heat, and LeBron has his chip now. He has his championship. He's earned his championship. He came out and just – he was a different man in this particular series and in these playoffs. You look at last year, though. You look at last year's playoffs – with LeBron James and the Miami Heat. The first three rounds, LeBron James was the reason that the Miami Heat got to the finals in 2011. He was the reason. He was dominant in the first three rounds of the playoffs. Very dominant. But when it came to the NBA Finals, he shriveled up a little bit. He shrunk a little bit. And he had his struggles in the fourth quarter throughout the NBA Finals in 2011. But 2012 was a different LeBron James. The man was a different man. He was a different beast. He was a different animal in 2012. He was just flat out a different dude in 2012. It was very, very obvious. He was focused. He was reading. He was meditating. And I look back, and one of the biggest moments to me, and it showed the growth, the maturation of LeBron James, was that game six against the Boston Celtics. Heat down 3-2. You look at his face. He didn't smile once. He was focused. He got his mind right before the game. I guess he was reading The Hunger Games, so he got his mind right there and got himself meditated and all that. And he was ready to go. He was a different animal. You never saw that LeBron James. You've always seen the carefree, the happy-go-lucky, the playful LeBron James. But in that game six against the Boston Celtics, you saw a different man there. 45-15 and 5 assists later, the Miami Heat were on their way to a Game 7, and he was the man there in Game 7. The man, LeBron James was the man every time he needed to be the man in these playoffs. It's time to give him his credit, his just due. We're going to bring in now WSVN Channel 7 sports reporter in Miami, the one, the only, Donovan Campbell. Donovan, how are you, sir?
What's going on? I like that intro. I need you down here to be introing me more often. I like that.
I try. And Donovan, let's get right down to it. LeBron James, finally has the championship. Did you sense the relief in him and his teammates after Game 5?
You know, PG, LeBron, I talked to him right after the game. I was one of the few reporters that caught him in the locker room and got a one-on-one, and you could just tell the relief. I mean, LeBron finally came out of that shell. I've been telling guys that for months now. LeBron needs to win a championship so he can be a lot more laid back with the media. You know, he always had that chink in the armor type of thing. He didn't really want to open up. But I think now the relief is definitely there, and he's definitely going to open up to us, and it's going to make our jobs that much easier because Wade is the man when it comes to being a media darling.
Right.
So I think now LeBron will follow that suit. You know, Wade had his title. Now he has his second title, and he's opened up to the media. I mean, he's always accessible, and I think now LeBron will do the same. So I definitely think the shell is definitely off LeBron James. That title is the relief, the redemption, the whole coronation, everything you want to put under LeBron name now, it's there.
And the funny thing is, you talked about it, he seems to be more relaxed, more at ease. The thing about it, LeBron said after the game he played angry in 2011. And looking at him now, I mean, before games, he's reading books, he's meditating. Did you notice a different LeBron James throughout the course of this 2012 season?
You know what? You definitely did, because his first year, I'm not going to lie, I was one of those people like, man, I don't know if I'm going to like this guy, man. He's kind of just arrogant. But this year, I guess that was just part of his anger. You know, he's also angry at the media, you know, because the media was fueling that fire, you know, the decision, all you kept hearing about the decision. And I guess now he decided, let me be a little bit happier. You know, he still doesn't really open up because, I mean, you got to remember, I can call him a kid because I'm a lot older than him. The kid's been on the microscope since he was in the seventh grade. So he's like, right. I'm tired of cameras being poked and prod. So I guess that's why he's like that. But he was definitely a different person this year compared to last year as far as on the media tips. So I think that translated also in his playing as well. He's just like, you know what, let me just be cool, calm, and collected. And I guess he said, you know, the family's here now. Savannah and the two boys, they're here now right. In South Florida with them. So I'm sure that made him a lot more at ease, you know, taking his boys to school every day. You know, all that kind of eases a man's, you know, psyche.
Right, and looking at it, LeBron James said before Game 5 that the Miami Heat needed to bring that Game 7 mentality to a Game 5. Did you sense that the whole team took that on?
Oh, my God, are you kidding me? Mike Miller played like that was the last game of his life. Like, his life depended on it. The man was on fire with 23 points, almost getting Jesus Shuttleworth's record. He had 8 threes, I think, in the finals. This guy had 7, so this guy was on fire. It just seems like every game somebody stepped up for him, and it seems like his speeches just, you know, kind of worked. They did take that mentality going into the entire finals. I mean, no one thought in a million years that the Miami Heat were going to end up sweeping the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, I saw Stephen A. Smith in the locker room, and I was like, look, brother, I love you. You're my man, 100 grand, but you picked the OK City Thunder. And he had to like, you know what? I picked them, but guess what? After the Heat did whatever they did to him in games 2-3, it was a whole different Heat team. So he had to change his tone, and that was kind of funny.
And the thing about it, you talked about it, the role players for the Miami Heat. Battier was big in games 1 and 2. They lost game 1, but he was big there in game 1. 17 points in game 1, 17 in game 2. You have Chalmers in game 4 stepping up, 25 big points. Game 5, Mike Miller, we talked about it, 23 big points in 23 minutes. In a lot of ways, it seemed like the Miami Heat finally became a team. Talk about that.
We were saying that all year long. And all playoffs, think about it. You already know what the big three are going to do. They're going to kind of wash. That's going to be a wash. You know, they're good for their 60, 70 points. But what the other guys are going to do, you know, the James Joneses of the world, the Udonis Haslems of the world, if those guys always get a decent game, you get a decent game out of them, the Miami Heat are always going to play well. And that's what they got. They got a guy each game to step up to keep their rep up. And it happened. So it worked.
We're talking to WSVN Channel 7 sportscaster in Miami, Donovan Campbell. And, Donovan, how about Eric Spoelstra? We've been on him very hard these last 2 years. It's time to give him his just due, isn't it?
Well, see, everybody else has been on him. I never get on a coach. I always feel like, you know, a coach doesn't go out there and shoot the ball. A coach doesn't go out there and hit the home runs or strike out. I never get that. And Eric Spoelstra to me is a great coach. I mean, I think a lot of people just was under this realization or fantasy. You could just roll the ball out with the Miami Heat and they were going to win, you know, 70-some-odd games. And it just doesn't work like that. And now people are realizing it just takes a hungry player, hungry players, guys to step up and hit shots. You know, Mike Miller wasn't hitting shots all season. You know, LeBron James wasn't taking it to the cup strong last year. This year he did. You know, sometimes I cringe like, yo, don't take the jumper. But then when he makes it, I'm like, okay. Because I feel like who can stop him? 6'8", 260. I mean, who's going to stand in front of that, him coming to the lane? And the guy does not, you know, get that many charges. So I don't know why he doesn't always go to the cup. So to me, that's not on Eric Spoelstra. That's on players executing what he tells them to go out and do. I mean, think about it. Phil Jackson is known as the best coach of all time. Last year he got swept with Kobe Bryant against the Dallas Mavericks and route to them winning the title. And I doubt anybody would say fire Phil Jackson. But the Lakers didn't execute. You see what I'm saying? So I never get on coaches. So everybody else, you know, national media, local media, everybody else might get on Eric Spoelstra. I never got on him.
And looking at it now, I mean, you've been around these Heat since the Big Three has been put together the last 2 years. And Dwayne Wade talked about it after a game. He talked to Shaq about it. And he talked about turning the team over to LeBron James. Did you see that?
Oh, that definitely happened. Last season, probably not. But this season, it definitely happened. I mean, last year, local media would just get so tired of them doing interviews together. You know, every year, last year, it's like he wanted to share like that role. But he kept doing interviews with LeBron and Wade, kept doing dual interviews, whether it was post-game, pre-game. And I was like, really? And then this year, you could tell they kind of like broke away from that. Each guy was their separate guy. You know, one would go first, the other would go second. And a lot of times, you know, LeBron would go first. So D-Wade was just like, you know, let him go ahead and handle that. You know, and he'd be like, yo, Bron, nah, you talk to the media. You know what I'm saying? So you could definitely see that. He definitely turned over the reins and said, like, you know what, it's your team now. Although D-Wade and Udonis Haslem are still co-captains because they've been there. They have the longest tenure on the team.
And looking at it now, I mean, a couple years ago when the Big Three came together, the Miami Heat celebrated like they won the championship. Now they can really celebrate. The parade is on Monday. You know Miami knows how to throw a party. What can we expect on Monday?
Wow. Speaking of throwing parties, they've been partying since Thursday. They've been hanging out at Live on Thursday. Last night, I think they were down on South Beach. I don't even know what they're doing tonight, but I'm sure Monday will be just, you know, all that and then some, because everybody be out there in there white hot. Hopefully it won't be raining. But you already know how we do it down here, Paul. You should know. You've known me for a long time. You already know. So
I think I have an idea.
Certain things can't be said on the radio, guys. But, yeah, Paul knows how we do it down here in Miami. And it won't be any different on Monday. I think we'll just take it more of a your initials. We'll do it more PG in front of the fans. But, yeah, we're going to do a nice little party, I'm sure. The parade will be great. I can only imagine. I wasn't here for the 2006 parade. All I saw was pictures. But I know it was hot. And it is expected to rain on Monday. So I hope that doesn't rain on the parade. No pun intended.
And Donovan, you were one of the few reporters who went down to talk to Michelle Obama about her fitness, the fitness thing that she was doing. Talk about that experience with Michelle Obama.
Oh, wow. By far, one of the best things I've ever done in my life. You know, she makes you feel like you're the only one in the room, and she's real passionate about that. You know, her Get Fit campaign, she's really, really passionate about it, and just to see how she's, you know, took the initiative to do something like that, you know, and she made a lot of good points when you're talking to her. You know, a lot of people are always talking about, you know, to eat healthy is very expensive. You know, she's like, no, it's not. You know, instead of picking up soda and juices, drink water. I mean, most of the time water is free. She was just saying instead of, you know, frying chicken, basically bake it. You know, just a lot of things she was just saying made a lot of sense. And that's just what she's all about. And not to mention, I mean, you're starstruck kind of sort of when you're in the same room with the First Lady of the United States and she's about 5'11", and, you know, she's kind of intimidating, you know, but at the same breath, you know, she's the First Lady, beautiful lady, and it was just an experience I remember for a lifetime. I was so fortunate and blessed to be one of the few chosen to get a chance to do a one-on-one interview with the First Lady.
And, Donovan, you are on Twitter. Where can fans connect with the great Donovan Campbell?
Yeah, anybody wants to hit me up on Twitter, DonovanC7 Sports, all one word, DonovanC7 Sports. And, you know, I try to be as humorous as possible. You won't catch me, oh, I'm on the way to the gym. None of those corny text messages for people to know, you know, my every life move. So I try to be positive, funny, and witty. You know what Twitter's all about, not to tell, you know, you're going to the gym or going to the bathroom, none of that rubbish. I'm going to the Heat game. Don't you wish you were coming? You know, nothing corny.
And looking at it, I know you're a guy of much style, much sophistication. In the locker room, the champagne was flowing. Did that suit get messed up?
You know what? I was smart enough to not wear, like, a great suit. I did that on purpose. So I wore a sports coat. And what I did, I took the sports coat off and just went under my shirt. And the funny thing is, the few of the players were showering me up, but it was like the media relation guys that actually took beer and dumped it over my head. So that was kind of weird. Like, oh, no, let me tell you how it feels, Don. This is how it feels. And I was like, wow. And then the funny thing is I had to go home because I had live shots all that day in the morning. That was the first time I ever did the morning show. So I had to be up at 5 o'clock in front of the camera, so I never went to sleep. So basically I was working from 6 p.m. on Thursday all the way till 2 p.m. on Friday.
Wow.
So that's what happens when you win a championship, I guess. You know, that's what pro sports championships are all about. So I'm definitely enjoying it. That's probably why you hear the little raspiness in my voice.
It sounds just fine to me. Donovan, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. Wishing you nothing but the best of luck. And let's do it again.
Anytime you want, man. We go way back, and, you know, you're one of my better friends in this world. So anytime you need me, just give me a call, man. I'm always here for you, brother.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Take care of yourself.
All right, man. Have a good one.
All right. Donovan Campbell, WSVN, sportscaster in Miami, Channel 7, a local Miami affiliate and a Fox affiliate. And he was there. He was there. He knows firsthand the celebration, the good times, the enjoyment, the pleasure that was in Miami on that particular night, Game 5, Thursday night. And it's, I mean, I said it on Twitter. I tweeted this. I mean, I talked about it. Could you imagine being in Miami this weekend? Could you imagine being in Miami? Could you imagine the parties? Could you imagine the good times, the celebrations, the laughs, the giggles? Could you imagine being in Miami, Florida right now? Place, South Beach, they already know how to throw a party. So could you imagine the type of party that is going on right now, the type of partying that's going on right now? And in general, you look at it. You look at it. And it's funny, I mean, you look at the whole thing. Before the Miami Heat, before they actually won a championship, they were celebrating. They celebrated. LeBron was talking all these different championship numbers, 6, 5, 6, 7 championships. They already celebrated before they actually won it. So Miami, they knew how to party back then, and they didn't even win anything. Now, they won it for the second time, but these three guys together are winning it for the first time. Wade has two, but as a unit, as the big three, this is their first time together winning a championship. And you look at it, you know they're going to celebrate. You've seen the celebration in the locker room. Bosch just really celebrating it up. And you look at Chris Bosch throughout the course of these playoffs. We have always talked about the Miami Heat, but we called them the big three, but we really didn't give the credit to Chris Bosh. And a lot of people called them the big two. And it showed to me when Chris Bosh was down in the Indiana series, down for most of the Boston series, this Miami Heat team was a different team, was a team that struggled. They struggled. But when they finally got Chris Bosh back, they became a different team. And when they put him into the starting lineup of Game 2, to me, that was one of the differences in this series. And I said it. I mean, I said it. What Chris Bosh brings for the Miami Heat is this, his jump shooting ability. So guess what? If Ibaka guards him, Serge Ibaka, guess what's going to happen? You're pushing Serge Ibaka away from the paint. Okay? So now Dwayne Wade's going to drive, LeBron James is going to drive, and there's no shot blocker there to stop him. You put Kendrick Perkins on Chris Bosh, and guess what? Chris Bosh uses his athleticism to go by him and to dominate Kendrick Perkins. And it was very evident in Game 5. Baseline, Chris Bosh puts the fake on Kendrick Perkins and goes right by him for the jam. Chris Bosh was the big difference in this series, and putting him at center was big for the Miami Heat. very big for the Miami Heat. And is it time for us now to say that, guess what? It's no longer the big two, but it is truly and really and honestly a big three here in Miami. Is it time for us to big up Chris Bosh and give him the credit that he deserves? I think it is. I think it is. I think it is. And you look at it now, and you look at the Miami Heat. You wonder now what happens moving forward. You wonder what happens moving forward. I mean, Boston is a little older. That team is a little older now. So it's not the same type team. Boston is a little older. You look at Orlando. What happens with Dwight Howard? There's some uncertainty there. And where does Dwight Howard land? You look at Chicago Bulls, Derrick Rose. When does he come back? So you have uncertainty there with the Chicago Bulls. The New York Knicks. Some talent there, but we have seen thus far Amari and Melo are really having a hard time playing with one another. And as Phil Jackson would say, he called them clumsy. So maybe the Knicks. What do you say about the Knicks? Are they really a team that you can look out for? So all the teams that are battling the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference, the Bulls, questions, the Celtics, questions, Ray Allen, KG, free agents, questions there. Orlando, questions. Knicks, questions. Indiana Pacers are a young team, but you don't get the sense that they're ready to take that next step. Questions. Philadelphia 76ers. I love the Sixers, but they did benefit from Derrick Rose tearing his ACL. Questions there. So many questions with everybody else. Not as many questions with the Miami Heat. You know, with that big three, they're going to be there. You know, with that big three, that they're going to be a formidable opponent for anybody. You know it. You know it, that they're going to be a formidable opponent for anybody. You know it. And so now, the Miami Heat have finally, and more so LeBron James, has finally gotten a ring. He finally got his ring, and in some respect, he is finally getting his just due. He's finally getting his just due. We're finally celebrating this man. And in some respect, this legend right now. And LeBron James. He has earned his stripes in some respect, everybody. Not in some respect. He has earned his stripes. He has a ring now. So now, the three MVPs, there's a ring next to those three MVP trophies. And a finals MVP trophy as well. LeBron James has shown all of us that he truly is a champion. He truly is a champion. And the thing about LeBron, and he talked about it playing angry in 2011, the thing about it is, you can kind of understand his anger because of the backlash of the decision show, the backlash that he experienced because of that show. The fans, the media, were very hard on LeBron James. Very hard on LeBron James. Very hard on him. And the fans came down hard on LeBron James after the decision show. I mean, he acknowledged that he would have done it differently if he had to do it over again. He didn't do the right things with that decision show. It was a mistake. It was a mistake for LeBron James to do that. And you could tell it was a mistake at the time, especially when he decided to go to Miami. It would not have been as much of a mistake. It wouldn't have been a mistake at all if he would have decided to go with Cleveland. But he was a darling in this league for his first 7 years with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was a darling in this league. But the moment he made the decision, the moment he decided that he was taking his talents to South Beach to join Dwayne Wade, to join Chris Bosh, the moment he made that decision was the moment that the backlash started. And granted, LeBron James, it was his right as a player who was in free agency. It was his right to do so. It was his right to do so. He earned his free agency. He earned it. And what he did with it. That was his right. We can't really knock him for that. It was his right as an NBA player to do what he did. He was a free agent, and in some respect, he took less money to go to Miami. So, I mean, it was his right to do what he did. Would I have liked to have seen LeBron James win a championship with the Cavaliers? I'm with Barkley. Charles Barkley talked about this as well. I'm with Barkley on this. I wish that he would have stayed in Cleveland and won a championship for that championship star city of Cleveland, Ohio. I wish he would have won it in Cleveland. That's what I wanted to see. Him winning the championship in Cleveland. That's what I wanted to see. LeBron James winning a championship in Cleveland. That's what I wanted to see. But guess what? It doesn't matter what I want. It really, truly does not matter what I want. What I want is irrelevant in this particular situation. What LeBron James wants and what he wanted was relevant. He wanted to take his talents to South Beach. And you wonder now, moving forward, we talked about the Eastern Conference. We talked about the Miami Heat. Chicago Bulls, even with Derrick Rose, I don't think would have beat the Miami Heat this year. So I'm having a hard time seeing who's going to challenge this team moving forward. Who's going to step up and challenge this team moving forward? Can the Celtics bring back the big three and still challenge this team? And you wonder if the Celtics, if Allen or Garnett are going to come back to Boston and take less money and give the Celtics an opportunity to possibly add other pieces around the big three. Big four now with Rondo. That should be interesting to see. That should be interesting to see. And we shall see what happens in the next NBA season. The second hour of Go For It starts right now. Second hour of Go For It starting right now. In this hour, we're expected to be joined by actor and one of the stars of Tyler Perry's Good Deeds, Brian White. And Good Deeds is now out on DVD, so make sure you get that movie. A great, great movie, by the way. I really enjoyed it. Seeing that movie was Brian White did a tremendous job as Walter Deeds in that particular movie. I mean, Walter Deeds was a guy who was just a flat-out jerk in that movie. But Brian White did a great job there, and great, great movie, and we're going to talk to Brian about that as the movie is now on DVD and talk about some of the other great things going on with Brian White. And one thing you know about Brian White, he is the son of NBA great JoJo White, former NBA great JoJo White, who played for the Boston Celtics. So you know that Brian White bleeds Celtic green. You know he's bleeding Celtic green. So we're going to talk to Brian White in this next hour. And I want to switch gears now, move away from the NBA a little bit, and move on to the Jerry Sandusky verdict trial. Verdict came down last night. Jerry Sandusky found guilty on 45 out of 48 counts. And, I mean, it's just a sad, sad story. 68-year-old man, and he's going to be spending the rest of his days in prison. And if and rightfully so. I mean, the reality is the evidence against him was overwhelming. The evidence against him was very damning. You just did not expect this man to get off. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing. And the thing about it is, you saw some of the people cheering and celebrating in some respect, but there is no winner here. Everybody loses. No one wins here. This is, you want justice to be served, definitely. But the reality is no one truly, truly wins. No one wins here. No one wins. I mean, and the thing about it also, one of his adopted sons, Matt Sandusky, came out and said that Jerry molested him as well. And you wonder, and I talked about this Thursday, and I'm going to talk about it some more. I mean, the thing about it, if this guy is molesting all these other kids, and the thing about Jerry Sandusky, and I think this, one of the sick parts of this whole thing, you're talking about kids from single-family homes, kids who've had various issues. And to take advantage of that, to do some of the things that he was accused of doing, it's just wrong. It's just flat out wrong. And he deserves all the things that are coming his way. He deserves it. If anybody deserves it, it's Jerry Sandusky. He truly deserves all the things that are coming his way. And currently he is on according to CNN, he's on a suicide watch. And the thing about it is you're 68 years old and it almost in some respect, he got away with it for most of his life. He started his foundation, Second Mile Foundation, in 1977. So you don't know when it started, but you look at it. I mean, he could have been molesting kids the better of three decades. So and so you want him away from children. This guy does not belong around children. But you look at it, he has six adopted kids, and one of them, Matt Sandusky, came out and said that Jerry did the same to him like he did to the others. Not the other kids, but the other victims. And it's not surprising. I mean, I can't sit here and tell you I'm shocked, because you don't think if he's doing that to all these other kids, that he's not doing it to his own. And granted, Matt's the only one who has come out. Matt's the only one who's come out here and said that. But, I mean, you just wonder. You really, truly wonder. And the thing about this case, it's just, you know, when you're molesting kids and doing bad things to kids who have already had other issues, you really, really mess them up for the rest of their lives. I mean, for these kids, it's probably they're adults now, but it's probably such a hard thing to come back from. I mean, just knowing the things that they may have went through. I mean, this is a grown man doing unspeakable acts to these kids. Just unspeakable acts. I mean, it's just very, very sick what Jerry Sandusky did to these children. It's very disgusting. It's very disturbing. And the thing about it is, yes, he's going to do his time, but maybe they can do something in terms of money for some of these victims, but money cannot bring back your innocence that was lost because of this man. Money can't bring that back. Money can buy you a lot of different things in this world, but it can't bring back your innocence. Money can't do that. And Jerry Sandusky robbed these kids of their innocence. And this, I guess the part about it is, I mean, he robbed them of their innocence, and he did it all in the name of trying to help them in terms of his foundation, in terms of his work with children. I mean, so it's just sickening, disgusting, despicable, nasty things that this man did. And it's just really sad. And his foundation, the Second Mile, was founded for at-risk kids. This foundation was founded in the name of helping kids who are at risk. So these are kids coming to him damaged on some level, already damaged on some level. Already damaged on some level. And Jerry Sandusky being, and I can't call him a man. I got to call him a monster. I mean, being the monster that he is. Did unspeakable things to these children. Such unspeakable things to these children. And now, he's going to pay for it. He's going to pay for it. But the thing about it is, and I said it before, I'll say it again, this conviction does not take back or give these kids back their innocence, the innocence that was lost because of these unspeakable acts by Jerry Sandusky. But I guess maybe and hopefully it sends a message to everyone out there, that it's not okay and it's not right, and that if you do unspeakable things to children, do horrible and bad things to children, you will pay for it. You will pay for it. Hopefully that sends that message to people. Hopefully. Hopefully. And hopefully it helps parents to want to talk to their kids more, to help their kids make right decisions, and help to understand what's going on in the minds of their kids. Help to understand what's going on in the minds of their children. Hopefully parents will want to do that because of this. But the innocence that was taken from these kids cannot be given back. It's gone. And the damage that these kids are dealing with, and the I mean, it's just, you can't get it back. You can't get the innocence back. And I'm sure a lot of these kids are going through a lot of various struggles in their lives because of these unspeakable acts by Jerry Sandusky. But he'll pay. And the reality is, 68 years old, he's going to die in prison. He's going to die in prison. And granted, they're talking about appeals and so on and so forth, but that's not unexpected. You expect an appeal. That's expected. An appeal is expected. But you look at this whole situation, and it's just, you look at it with just sadness, and you wonder and you hope that this will never happen again, and that the people who are involved, the people who have may have covered this up, you hope that they pay as well. You hope that they pay. But it's just a sad story. It's just a flat-out sad story. It's just a sad story. You wonder, I mean, his wife was with him for many years. You wonder if she knew what was going on. And was she just, I mean, you wonder what she knew. You wonder. But it's a done deal now. Jerry Sandusky, guilty. 45 out of 48 counts. And now the rest of his life will be spent where it needs to be spent, and that is in a prison. That's where he needs to spend the rest of his life, in a prison. Sad story. Sad, sad story. And the only good thing about it that is justice has been served, and now hopefully some of the victims can have a level of closure here. Hopefully. Hopefully. You just hope that these guys, these victims, these people can have a level of closure here. But we'll see. We shall see. We shall see. And it came down last night. The verdict came down last night. And you knew what was going to happen. Everybody knew he was going to be guilty. It didn't really take a rocket scientist to figure that out. You're listening to Go For It on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Corey Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Picturica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man Paulie G and Jeremy. Get it!
Thank you, Corey Live. And we're back, and we're going to bring in a guy who knows a lot about doing good deeds and a man who does a lot of great work in the community. Let's bring in now actor Brian White. Brian, how are you,
brother,
sir?
How are you?
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's a blessing to be here. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and it's a blessing to have you. And Brian, looking at it, we know you're a lifelong Celtics fan. LeBron James and the Miami Heat finally got the championship. Were you surprised?
Yeah, I mean, I was in Miami working during the Celtics-Miami series, so had tickets to two of the games, was able to attend one. I had tickets to game seven, and I was back in L.A. It killed me. Miami really rose to the occasion is what I'll say. You know, Chalmers and Battier played about as well, you know, as they're capable of playing, I think.
Right.
You know, like they extended themselves and rose to the occasion. And so if anything surprised me, I think it was that. I think we all knew that Bosch was a big difference. He's just so long, and he's a shot alterer, so he changes the way teams have to play and expands the floor for Wade and LeBron, and that's a problem for everybody. But I think everybody didn't expect Chalmers and Battier to play that consistently well over, you know, an eight-game span. And good for them. Congratulations. And I like the maturity in LeBron. You know, I'm a buddy. He's a buddy. One of the things that I noticed most about the entire playoffs was LeBron's no longer got his tells, his fidgets. He doesn't bite his nails. He doesn't seem or feel nervous. And that's maturity, and it's good to see.
And you look at LeBron James, you talked about his maturity. And the one game that I point to is Game 6 against the Boston Celtics in TD Bank Garden. And he came in that game, and you didn't see a smile on his face. He had a scowl.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out 45 points, 15 boards, 5 assists. I mean, and to me, you saw the maturity there.
Yeah. He definitely, he had that killer instinct this year, whereas in other years it might not have been as strong. And, as a Celtic fan, you know, with Green out, with Battier out, you know, with a lot of, not Battier, excuse me, Bradley out
right
on his shoulder, you know, it alters a lot of things. And I think LeBron really, from that point on, as a competitor, smelled blood. He saw the weakness. He said, nobody can shake me now. Nobody's going to make me exert myself so much on either end of the court that I can't, you know, take on two or three guys at a time. And he did that for the rest of, you know, the series against both teams. And I was surprised, I guess, at anything with the OKC series that Harden and Cephalosha weren't able to do a little bit more defensively.
Right.
And, you know, I wasn't necessarily surprised that Westbrook was erratic. He's the most physically gifted small man in the game. But, you know, when he gets mature, like at least at LeBron's level of maturity, he's going to be another force like a LeBron. So, it's, you know, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, let's talk about your Celtics now. I mean, they made it to the conference finals. You look at it now, KG is a free agent. Ray Allen's a free agent. Mm-hmm. What do you see the future of the Boston Celtics? How do you see the future?
Well, Boston's a special place to raise your family. So, you know, for players like, well, Paul signed, you know, everybody's saying this is the last year, you know, that they have a shot at a run. I don't think so, you know. I think the opposite of what happened with LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Bosch might happen with the Celtics. It has the potential to happen, you know, with players like Wilcox and Green, you know, also able to come back, Bass. You know, if they can put all those pieces together, they can have a mature Indiana Pacers-type team, you know. And that's if everybody's healthy, you know, a healthy Paul Pierce, a healthy Bradley, a healthy Ray Allen, you know, playing for passion and not for money because, you know, his family likes to live in Boston. KG wanting to finish in Boston because, you know, his family's going to school there. You know, it might create an opportunity where these guys can stack a 12-deep team and really – be able to smash on people every night. I, you know, that's what I'm hoping for anyway. And, you know, you already know you're building around Rondo for the future, so your nucleus is there. And, you know, if not, if we can't hold on to the pieces, there's obviously three or four really good options to replace whatever leaves. So we'll see what happens. Danny Ainge is a smart man.
And we'll see what happens with the Boston Celtics in 2012. And they got pretty far. No one expected them to get to this point. And it did help, and I'm not taking anything away from the Celtics run, but it did help that Derrick Rose tore his ACL in round one against the Philadelphia 76ers.
Well, Chicago's the best team. You know, with the Derrick Rose, you know, Miami's not the best team even with the championship. They played the best. They executed the best. You know, OKC is a better team. If everybody plays their best game right now, you know, Celtics are a great team if everybody's there and healthy. OKC is a great team. San Antonio underperformed. They're a great team. They're a little bit old, you know, so we'll see. But they're also a great team. But the Bulls, healthy, they're a problem. You know, Rose creates a problem. You know, it's like Rondo on steroids when Rose is on because he's a pure scorer and the creativity. So it's in, you know, and they're deep and they're young. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next year. You know, Knicks are good. You got a lot of good teams, so I'm excited about the prospect of the NBA. The young kids are now engaged because you got the young teams actually winning, and then you have some mature teams and some people like Larry Bird building mature teams for the future in Indiana. So I'm excited about the NBA overall.
Definitely, it's a good time to be a fan of the NBA. It's in good hands.
Better than boxing, right? Better shape than boxing, right?
Yeah, well, let's talk about boxing. I mean, I saw your Twitter page. You talked about the Pacquiao-Timothy Bradley fight. We all know it was a bad decision. And boxing's a great sport. I love the sport of boxing. But these bad decisions, it's just not good for the sport.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, realistically, as a fight fan, I'm now more of a UFC fan than boxing. But as a fight fan, there's only a couple of things that I really want to see, and the only one that I'm really trying to pay for on pay-per-view before either one of them gets hurt or has to have too many fights that slow them down, you know, like all fighters do. You can't fight a million times, especially boxing. You can fight UFC longer because you're not taking the same kind of head punches. Anyway, I want to see Pacquiao Mayweather, period. You know, I don't want them to be 44 years old, and I've waited, you know, all this time for them to slow down until the promoters feel like they've gotten every other thing out of them that they can get. You know, that's what I see happening. I don't see – I see it as a ploy to delay the one thing that still matters, you know. And I love that Floyd came out and fought Cotto, you know. I love that he was bleeding. It made me, you know, just like the last third of Bernard Hopkins' boxing career, he's really he has a defensive style, but he started being offensive.
Right.
And I love to see that. So much respect for those kind of fighters because that's what makes them gladiators. And seeing Floyd do that, Manny always does that. Bernard Hopkins does that. There's very few of them that can now you know, be on pay-per-view and draw people and have us all talking about it in the streets for the month up to the fight, watching HBO religiously, et cetera, et cetera. And that's these two guys. And it feel like boxing is putting stuff in the way. And that's what's really frustrating about it.
Definitely. It's frustrating, just like you said. It's just you want to see Pacquiao Mayweather, but I don't think it'll happen to at least 2013, to at least.
And that's another 2 years of them, you know, everybody's talking about, what was the question going into the Bradley fight? No disrespect to Bradley, he's a great warrior and everything, but, you know, did Manny slow down enough so that Bradley can keep up with him? If we're even having that conversation, I need him in the ring yesterday with Mayweather. I don't want to see him fight Bradley. I don't want Bradley to touch him. You're not on his level yet, Bradley, and you're not on Mayweather's level, so wait. And, you know, if boxing could do one thing for me, they would pay Bradley to give Manny the right, however it needs to work out, to fight Mayweather first, and then he is guaranteed to fight the winner of that fight, and he gets more money. You know, if it's millions, tens of millions of dollars that they give Bradley just to sit out one and give Manny his belt back so he and Mayweather can go figure it out, and then he fights the winner, you know, no questions asked, give him $100 million. It's worth it to boxing, you know. But anyway.
But you see, the funny part about that fight, the Bradley Pacquiao fight, I ordered the fight on pay-per-view. I fell asleep on the fight around the 11th round. I woke up, and when I woke up, I saw Bradley holding the belt on top of the corner there, corner post of the ring. And I'm saying to myself, did he knock him out or something? Mm-hmm. So I was shocked at what I saw, and what I saw Bradley holding the belt up and celebrating. I just didn't think it was possible, but I guess anything is possible in the sport of boxing.
I'm with you, man. I watched it with my wife, and she was screaming at the TV, that's not possible. That's crazy. And, I mean, once if my wife's screaming and she's judging it, you know, you already know.
And, Brian, I mean, you played the sport of football, and I want to get your take on this. I mean, you played for the Patriots for a short time. We're hearing stories now of various former players struggling with concussion issues. In some respect, when you hear those type of things, are you glad you got out of the sport of football when you did?
I don't want to say glad. I mean, it's a blessing, you know, that I played two seasons, football, lacrosse, and, you know, in the rest of my life. So, you know, I have the dings and the bangs and the bruises, but I don't have a 10-year NFL career where I have multiple concussions. I had two concussions in my career. That's part of football, you know. And, it's – I guess it's more eye-opening than anything. I don't think – people that are in MMA don't know going into the ring that they could really get hurt. I don't think football players have ever thought, you know, that you couldn't really get hurt. When I was in Pop Warner, kids broke femur bones and cracked ribs and got concussions and, you know, got hurt pretty bad from age 8 up, you know. You know, I mean, when I was a kid, I remember Daryl Stingley at church, you know.
Okay.
So the game was always associated with, you're being brave because you're literally risking your life like a soldier does, and that is how life is. If you don't stick your neck out, you're not going to get any glory. You don't have any chance at any glory. And you know, my dad, being a basketball player, always pointed out the difference between a sport like football and boxing and a sport like basketball. He's like, no. I'm talented enough to play football, but the first day at college, he played football as well. He actually, I believe, got drafted by the Cowboys, if I'm not mistaken, in 69. But he was like, hell no, I'm not trying to get knocked out. You know, that's too much contact. You know, he likes a finesse sport like basketball,
right.
And there was always a distinction. And I definitely like contact sports like MMA, football, lacrosse, etc. And that is the dividing line. So, you know, it's something I think people go into with their eyes wide open. And especially on the professional level, assume the risk because of all the rewards, especially in this day and age. You know, there's so much money being made, and there's no other possibility in these people's lives of ever making one-hundredth of that money. So, you know, some people go to the military to feed their family. You know, do I feel bad that somebody instead went to the NFL and made $100 million? And, you know. Assumed a couple of risks and took the hits. No, I don't necessarily feel bad. I feel bad for that man and that man's family for what's happening. But, you know, it's a risk we all undertake, and it's part of the game.
It's all about risk. And would you let your children play football?
Oh, yeah. I mean, why? Life hurts. It hurts, it hurts, it hurts. And it will beat you up. Way worse than the game of football. But, you know, in most people's lives, there's not going to be as many rewards as NFL players get on a weekly basis with their check, you know.
Definitely.
And the percentages of people in the NFL that are having problems versus how many people are in the NFL, you know, 5%, 10%. You know, I'm actually not sure what the percent is, but that other 90% that's okay and been able to feed their families and their families' families and their grandkids' kids, you know, I don't know if there's anything else that they could have done in their lives to affect or impact positively that many people.
Right.
for the 10% that families are still doing well, but they're personally not doing okay. And again, rewind the clock 25 years for that individual and say, you know, in today's day and age, you can be a professional football player and have these problems, or not be a professional football player and have not have any money. I don't know how many of them would change their decisions, you know.
Right.
It's just something to think about. So I think that's the real question. Knowing the risks, would you still do it given the rewards? I think 99.9% of the guys that say yeah, you know, it's not, you know, 1969 when my dad was playing and they're not making a whole lot of money. So, you know, I don't know. It's something to talk about. So it's a good subject.
And looking at it, though, you mentioned it. I mean, there was a stat out there, I believe, about football players. About 70% after they retire, I think it's either they go broke or they're divorced. I think it's both. They either go broke and divorce.
Yep.
And so you wonder if somebody told me, if somebody tells you or any NFL player, you know what, there's a possibility by age 40 you will be divorced and broke, would you still play football? And I think most of us
still there's not a correlation. There's not a correlation other than the type of experience some of these guys are choosing to have. There's nothing that precludes you from getting your education while you're playing football.
Right.
Example, Fitzpatrick in Buffalo. Okay, we're talking premier NFL quarterback who happens to have a Harvard degree. You know, he didn't just go, he graduated. And he has a $65 million contract. Jeremy Lin, another, you know, example in the NBA. Okay, you can get there. You can get the money. You know, you're going to get his $5 million, you know, and he happens to be Asian, which means his world market share is off the charts. And, you know, as long as he keeps his image clean, he has the potential to earn like LeBron James type money as, you know,
right,
as Jeremy Lin in his second year. That's what education, that's what being marketable on an international global level. You know, same thing with Fitzpatrick. Every corporation will want to work with him. You know,
definitely,
because he's a stellar image and a star, you know. So you go from paying for Harvard to getting $500 million from the NFL in endorsements and deals and all this stuff because of your pristine image and your speaking ability and your, you know, your integrity as a human being that worked hard to get there. It's a blue-collar thing. And, you know, the world likes blue-collar success stories, especially out of athletes and, you know, that have done it right. And so, you know, I think that's all part of the discussion.
Right. We're talking to actor Brian White, one of the stars of Tyler Perry's Good Deeds, which is now on DVD. And, Brian, let's talk about that. You play Walter Deeds in that movie. You were a mean dude. Walter was a mean dude in that movie. Did you like playing that role?
Like it? Nah. I mean, I don't think it's a like thing. I enjoyed the opportunity is how I would phrase it. It's you know, with Tyler Perry, he deals with very personal stories. Every single one of the characters, I've done three movies with them, and in every movie, he deals with true stories. I mean, this stuff really happens, as you know, just like a story like Precious. That stuff is real. It happens. You know, and people go, God, there's people that live these lives and live like it. Yep. And what I love is he blurs the lines. He has, in Good Deeds in particular, he has a very wealthy family that has the same kind of problems, you know, a janitor and a postal worker and their family would have. You know, it's no different.
Right.
You know, money doesn't bring you happiness, and I think that's what Tyler just points in the face. I think, you know, everybody thinks that the upper crust section of society doesn't have certain kind of problems or doesn't deal with certain kind of emotions or you know, difficulties in life, and that's certainly far from the truth, and I enjoy that. And what I enjoy most about the men that Tyler allows me to portray is the characters, the roles. They're nothing like the real me, and I'm a guy that has five younger sisters, and I like to give them cautionary notes, show them what kind of guys they should stay away from, point out to, you know, the young boys that I speak to in middle school and high school what causes people in life not to have their dreams come true. And a guy like Walter is bitter and angry that life hasn't worked out the way he envisioned it. And the reason that he can't see is he's in his own way, just like my boy Tyrese's book says, get the hell out of your own way, you know, and stop blaming the world for your shortcomings, for your inability to, you know, rise to the occasion and change your attitude, and you might change your world. And I think that that is why Tyler's so brilliant and why I am drawn to working with him, because he allows me to talk about stuff like that in these roles. And then as Brian White, I can go to colleges and middle schools and high schools and talk to young boys and girls about these characters and, you know, what similarities they see to other people in their lives. And the surprise to me has been how many young people go, I know this is my brother. That's my brother. You know, I'm like, oh, that's a real person in your life? Wow. You know, how many people are out there angry and blaming the world for not having? And how can we change that? I think that's the discussion that I'm inspired to be a part of and igniting.
And in some respect, then, being that Walter and Brian White being yourself, are totally two different people, was it a challenge playing that role?
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally relying on Tyler. You know, I am, my job is to show up, listen to his notes. He gives the backstory, he paints the characters to us, and then we embody them and deliver his dialogue. He writes every word, you know, the story is his own. And, you know, he takes each one of us individually and directs us and then puts it together and creates this opera, you know, a soap opera, if you will, but grounded in reality. And that's what I think is so brilliant about it, because it mimics, you know, his movies mimic reality TV, which is quote-unquote real life. And, you know, there's a lot of similarities there, and that's why it's such a volatile subject for most of the viewers. And, you know, people have such strong reactions, and I think that that's all part of his brilliance.
And you did a good job. You stepped up. You stepped up to the challenge, and you did a great job in that particular movie.
Thank you. Thank you. That's largely based on Tyler's, his, you know, family and people he knows. So he was very specific about, you know, where each character was coming from, what their motivations were, and how he wanted, you know, each color painted in the tapestry. So, you know, we were just like pieces of clay in the sculptor's hands, and, you know, I'm always down to help Tyler tell his story and deliver his message.
We're talking to actor Brian White, and Brian, I read somewhere that one of your goals was to star in your own studio play. How close are you to making that happen?
You mean film?
Yeah.
I'm close. I mean, starring is a funny word to me. You know, I didn't really set out to be a movie star. I set out to make quality films. You know, there's a world of difference. And, you know, I have a production company, and we have three or four projects in development, you know, right now. I'm excited. Columbus Short and I are working on one together. I'm really excited about that one. So we're close. It's all about finding the right stories, you know, creating a team that you respect, from the directors to the other producers to the other talent. And, you know, it's a good time because the studios are making more films for us, starring us right now. And there's a lot of talent out there. So we are close, and hopefully in 2013, 2014 at the latest, we'll have something out for you guys to check out.
Okay, and Brian, I mean, one of the things about you and talking to you, you're a positive man right now, and you do a lot of work with empowering kids with your foundation, Black Carpenter. Tell us a little bit about it.
I just wanted to be counter-programming. I was raised around great role models, from starting with my grandmothers, my parents, you know, both my mom, my dad, and my stepmother, uncles, aunts, and then my coaches. And it's sort of a pay it forward, because my dad, being an athlete, has always had a foundation. From the day I was born, the JoJo White Growth League was, you know, made a strong impression on me. What people said about my dad's philanthropic efforts, my mom's philanthropic involvement in the community, taught me that stuff matters more than they teach you in school. You know, that is the real reason why people get behind people, why they support people, why they like people. You know, it's the essence of their character. And good character is always rewarded in some valuable way. So I always aspired to have that, and started when I got out of school and started playing back in the late 90s with Warm to Kids. We're All Role Models to Kids, which was founded by ML Carr from the Boston Celtics, and that turned into, over the years, Black Carpenter. And it's a youth empowerment movement, basically teaching kids the commonalities of success between all people, regardless of race, religion, creed, you know, country of origin, etc., that all successful people do certain things, know certain things about relationships, about spirituality, about education, about hard work, and why people are successful, and basically teaching them to carry those tools in life with them, like a carpenter carries, you know, education and the tools that he uses to draft a skyscraper or a house, and, you know, telling them that they can manifest their destiny just in that manner. So that's what Black Carpenter is all about.
And where can we find information about it?
BlackCarpenter.org.
Okay. Fans, check it out, BlackCarpenter.org. Brian White doing some great things, not only in Hollywood, but also in the community, doing his thing, taking care of people, helping people, and that's what we need more of in this world. And Brian, yesterday you had the situation with Jerry Sandusky. He was convicted yesterday of doing just heinous acts to kids. And looking at this thing, and being that you do a lot of work in the community, how disgusted are you when you hear things like that?
I mean, that's just awful. It's that even can happen, you know, in this day and age is astonishing, you know. And it's appalling. And
right.
I mean, this guy, the horror that he's going to face in jail is only, you know, outdone by the horror that he inflicted on these kids over the years.
Right.
And you know, I'm glad and that he is going to, you know, get 50 life terms and be branded the worst of the worst. And what sticks out in my mind is when he's in jail, he's at an age where most of the inmates were fans of his when they were on the outside. It's going to be scary. It's going to be scary, ugly, you know, in jail culture with how much hate is going to be coming his way and how violated these people that were, if there are fans of his that know what he's in there for, how they're going to feel about it is giving me satisfaction with that he is paying, you know, for this. He is going to pay in a major way for what he did. And I hope he's in general population and goes through every single second of it like he did to those kids, you know?
Definitely.
It makes me think about that father in was it Texas?
Texas, yes.
It just got off. Amen. And if anybody out there doesn't think that that's right what he did, stop it. Stop it. You know?
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, who would not react in that way? I mean, I think anybody, if they have children, would react in the way he reacted. I mean,
I don't even think he overreacted. He didn't pick up a rock and do it. He didn't go get a gun or something. He automatically jumped on the dude, punched him a couple times, and just did it with such fury that and ended up killing the man that was harming his kid. That's what parents are supposed to do.
And Brian, we talked about A Good Deed's out on DVD right now. What else does Brian White have in store for us?
We have a new television series that I'm excited about called Beauty and the Beast, coming to CW this fall, starring Kristen Krug, Jay Ryan, Max Brown, Austin Basis, and myself. It's a new spin on the old Beauty and the Beast story. Got the producers of Kristen's old show Smallville and the producers of the original Beauty and the Beast back. And we'll be on Thursdays, 9 o'clock, starting this October on CW. So we're really excited about that show. My book, Black Carpenter, will be out, I believe, October, November, hopefully before Thanksgiving, on newsstands everywhere. And people can always keep up with me online at brianwhiteonline.com, my official site, or follow me on Twitter at @actorbrianwhite. And holla at your boy.
And Brian, it was a pleasure hollering at you today, man. Wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. And let's do it again.
I appreciate you. Thanks for having me on.
Take care.
All right.
Brian White, actor, man's doing a lot of great things, not only in Hollywood, not only on the big screen, but also in his community. Support some of the great things that Brian White has going on. And looking at it, we talked about the Pacquiao-Timothy Bradley fight, and funny thing about it, the WBO, sanctioning body, reviewed this particular fight, Pacquiao-Bradley. In reviewing this fight, I believe it was five judges, and five judges all scored it for Manny Pacquiao. The five judges all scored the fight for Manny Pacquiao. I think That's kind of all you need to know about that particular fight. The fight was not that close. I mean, it was very obvious when the fight was over who was the winner. And I told the story to Brian Wayne, and I'll say it again. I was asleep. I bought the fight. I paid my $60. I was asleep. Fell asleep around the 11th round, woke up in the 12th round, or at the end of the fight, I should say, and I see Timothy Bradley celebrating. And in seeing him celebrate, I'm thinking to myself, okay, he must have knocked Pacquiao out. And then, to my amazement, my wife tells me that he won by decision, Bradley meaning. And I'm saying to myself, how is that possible? I mean, it wasn't even close. Was not even close. And so, but anyway, the WBO, they reviewed it. Five judges all scored it for Manny Pacquiao, but it does not change the decision. But it does in some respect. I don't know. I mean, it really doesn't do anything because, I mean, in terms of the court of public opinion, the court of public opinion believes that Manny Pacquiao won the fight. Most people, if they have a brain, believe that Manny Pacquiao won that particular fight. But, the end result is the end result, and the end result is that Timothy Bradley keeps his belt, and Timothy Bradley, hopefully, I mean, and I know Pacquiao wants a rematch, but hopefully we don't see a rematch. I'm really not interested at this point. It really wasn't that great of a fight. It wasn't a close fight, and we all know who was the dominant fighter on that particular night. It was Manny Pacquiao. And just like Brian White said, it's time for Pacquiao Mayweather to get this thing on, but it's not going to happen until at least 2013. And you're wondering, as this thing continues to progress, will it ever happen? Will this ever happen? And that's something that we're going to have to think about and maybe have to deal with, that we probably will not see Pacquiao Mayweather at all. Probably will not see it. And looking at some other things, looking at the Oklahoma City Thunder now, a team that is young, a team that is very, very talented, they may have some issues keeping this whole thing together. James Harden is going to be, he's up for an extension this summer. Serge Ibaka, up for an extension this summer. But you look at it, these two guys being up for extensions this summer, you look at everything. With the new salary cap and then the rules and everything, with this new collective bargaining agreement, you're wondering, and the talk is out there, whether or not OKC will be able to afford it, especially without paying a luxury tax, which is going to be high. Can OKC, and OKC is in a small market, can the Oklahoma City Thunder be able to afford, will they be able to afford both Ibaka and James Harden? Will they be able to afford those two guys? And that's a big question that the Thunder may have to answer. If not, then may not have to answer it this year, but they're definitely going to have to answer it next year. And if I'm OKC, if I'm Sam Presti and I'm the one making the decision here, I think the decision is clear in a lot of ways. I would go with Serge Ibaka. I mean, that size, that athleticism, that length, and just a lot of things that he brings to the table. You can find two guards in this league and in general are easy to find. They're a lot easier to find than power forwards and bigs in general. Two guards are a lot easier to find. And Serge Ibaka, his ability throughout the course of this year. I mean, he averaged 9 points a game, 7 rebounds, but he averaged a big-time 3 blocks a game. Still young. And still, you know, he's still raw in a lot of ways. Still a raw player, but even with being raw, and he was able to contribute and contribute big-time for OKC this year. I think if I had to make a decision, and you told me that you either could have Serge Ibaka, or you can have James Harden. I think it would be clear who I would go for. Who would I go with? I think it's clear I would go with Serge Ibaka. The man is only 22 years old. 22 years old. His ability to block shots, his ability to get up and down the floor. I mean, he's a beast. 6'10", 235 pounds, only his second year in the league. His ability to block shots are second to none. Many say and argue that he truly is and truly should have been the defensive player of the year. If he played with the Knicks, he probably would have been defensive player of the year. He probably would have been a defensive player of the year. I mean, the man is a beast. He's a beast on the defensive end. His shot blocking ability is second to none. Second to none. Second to none. And so, led the NBA in blocks, was third in blocks last season, 2010-2011. Came back with another three blocks this year a game. He's a beast. He's truly a beast. And so, he, in my mind, was and is the true defensive player of the year. He was a defensive player of the year. And like I said, two guards are a lot easier to come by than a 6'10 shot blocking machine in Serge Ibaka. So if you ask me if I had to choose between Ibaka or James Harden, I think it's kind of a difficult decision because you don't want to get rid of a James Harden and what he brings to the table. But I think the decision in a lot of ways is clear in some respect. I think you would have to go with, Serge Ibaka over James Harden. I think you'd have to go with Ibaka over Harden. But we'll see. We'll see. And if you're okay, see, hopefully you will be able to keep both of them. Hopefully you will be able to keep both of them. But looking at Oklahoma City now, and again, a young team, obviously, with Durant, Westbrook, Ibaka, James Harden, a very young team. But you look at OKC now, and you wonder, yes, a lot of people believe that they're going to get back to this point. Ultimately, a lot of people believe that they will get over the top and ultimately win an NBA title. But you look at Oklahoma City, you look at the Western Conference. Kobe Bryant is still around. San Antonio is still a formidable opponent. The Dallas Mavericks, they prepared themselves in a lot of ways with some of the moves they made. They prepare themselves to have cap space in this offseason. Do they get Deron Williams, the hometown Deron Williams, a guy who is from Dallas? He's a hometowner. So does he go back to his hometown of Dallas and play for the Dallas Mavericks? So, and if you get a Deron Williams in Dallas, I think that changes everything. And the Grizzlies, they're a tough ball club, and they gave Oklahoma City fits two seasons ago in the playoffs last season. They gave them fits. And look at that. And so they're a young, formidable team. The Western Conference right now, there are some teams out there that are still formidable, still very formidable. The Lakers, with Kobe Bryant, you have to say that they're still a formidable team with Andrew Bynum, a young stud center, if he can get his head right. But you look at the Lakers, there's still talent there. The Clippers with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, what are they doing this offseason? And do those two become – Griffin is only going to get better, does become a year better – and Chris Paul is one of the best point guards in the game. So that's a team that you're going to have to worry about as well. I say, and with Oklahoma City, there really are not guarantees. And there's no guarantees in this league anyway in terms of injuries. Injuries can change a lot of different things. Ask the Chicago Bulls. You can even ask the Boston Celtics. Even ask the Orlando Magic. Injuries have a way of changing things. Dwight Howard, out for the playoffs. Derrick Rose, out for the playoffs. Avery Bradley, Jeff Green, these guys miss an extended period of time. Chris Wilcox as well miss an extended period of time. So you look at, there are no guarantees in this thing. Can we assume that if Harden, Ibaka, Durant, Hart, and Westbrook are healthy 100%, that they can get back to this point and continually get back to this point for year to year, from year to come, from this year to next year, and for the next 3, 4, 5 years? Can you assume that these two, that these guys, the Oklahoma City Thunder, can get back to this point with that talent? Can you assume that if these guys are healthy and are together, that they can get back to the finals? Yes, you definitely can assume that. That's a legitimate assumption there. But as I said, the East, questions with the Celtics, question with the Bulls, questions even with the Pacers, still a young team. You know, questions abound. Questions with their Magic and where's Dwight Howard go. So questions abound in the East. Out West, not so many questions. Kobe Bryant is going to come back. Kobe Bryant's going to come back. Andrew Bynum and the Lakers, Gasol. So they're still a formidable team. The Dallas Mavericks, still a formidable team. The San Antonio Spurs, you know Tim Duncan is not leaving San Antonio, still a formidable team. So all these formidable teams are still in the Western Conference. All these formidable teams are still teams that you have to watch out for in the Western Conference. So to say that Oklahoma City is going to get back to the NBA Finals and say that they're going to win finals year after year, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, to say that about Oklahoma City may be a little premature considering what is out there and what is in front of them in the Western Conference. So you look at it, there are no guarantees. And you saw Kevin Durant broke down and hugged his mom and was crying. I mean, he's young, and he wanted to get back to this. He wanted to win, and he wanted to win very badly. It just wasn't his time. It was time for the king to go on his throne and get his ring. And that is LeBron James. It was time. It was flat out, truly, his time. It was his time, folks. It was LeBron James's time. Kevin Durant, it's not your time yet, sir. Russell Westbrook, it's not your time. And a lot of people have criticized Westbrook for his play, and some will say he shoots too much, so on and so forth. I disagree. Russell Westbrook, first of all, he came into the league, and he wasn't even a point guard in college, so he's learning the position. He's learning the position. Point guard's one of the toughest positions to play in a game of basketball. It's just like the quarterback in a game of football. It's a tough position to play. Guess what? Russell Westbrook, with his talent, his ability, his athleticism, is only going to get better. So I think Russell Westbrook, I think he needs to continue to play the way he plays. He needs to play the way he needs to play. And you look at game four where he scored 43 points, you got the sense that he was trying and was willing and able to put his team on his back. He tried. He was close. But if it wasn't for the greatness of the king, and that king being King James, LeBron James, maybe Oklahoma City would have won that game, and maybe we would be talking about a game six tomorrow night. But LeBron James, I started the show with LeBron James, and I'm going to end with LeBron James. LeBron James, This was his run. This was his playoff. This was his time to shine. It flat out was his time. Backs against the wall, Indiana, he did his thing. Backs against the wall against the Boston Celtics, he did his thing. Backs against the wall in game two against Oklahoma City Thunder, he did his thing. And, oh, by the way, he did a little Willis Reed for us, too, with the cramping situation in game four. Hit a big three, could barely get himself up and down the court, hit a big-time three in that particular ball game. LeBron James was a stud in these playoffs. LeBron James was a stud in the NBA Finals. He was a stud the first three rounds last year against in the playoffs. But in the NBA Finals, he was small. He came up very small. But in 2012, it was a whole different situation, a whole different LeBron James, a mentally focused LeBron James, a man who had his eyes on the prize. And the prize was the NBA title. The prize was getting a ring. He has it now. He has that ring. He made the decision to go to South Beach. And because of that decision, many have hated on him. Haters have come near and far against LeBron James. But guess what? Even though he had the haters, even though he had the hate, LeBron James still found a way. He overcame his demons. He exercised those demons of the 2011 NBA Finals, and he came out and was a dominant force. He played the way we thought he would. He could and would. He was an MVP in this regular season, and he was the MVP of these playoffs and the NBA Finals. He was truly the MVP. So it's now time for us to big up LeBron James and celebrate this man, this beast. LeBron James, you deserve it. Congratulations. And I called it, by the way. I said LeBron James and the Heat would beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. I called it at the beginning of the year. I said LeBron James and the Heat would beat the Oklahoma City Thunder in the NBA Finals, and by golly, I was right. Feels good to be right sometimes. I want to thank Moses Foku of the Philadelphia Eagles for stopping by. Make sure you check out his foundation, Root53Foundation.org. That's Root, R-O-O-T, 53Foundation.org. Also want to thank actor Brian White for stopping on by. Make sure you check out some of the great things he has. Follow him on Twitter at actor Brian White. And also, he's doing some great things in the community, blackcarpenter.org. Follow him, go to his website there, and also brianwhiteonline.com. Go there and support some of the great things he's doing. Also want to thank WSVN reporter, sportscaster, Donovan Campbell for stopping on by. It was a pleasure having him as well. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at GoForItGan. For everybody here at GoForIt, hopefully you have a great week. We'll see you back here. Same bad time, same bad channel. See you later. Bye.